Hi, this is Fabrice Lapeltree for Creative Disturbance Project Pioneers and Pathbreakers channel. I'm a French art historian and my guest is the British curator, writer and researcher Bronek Ferran. We are today with the artist Lillian Lin.
So Lillian, this is Bronek continuing our conversation. You've talked to us about how you began to introduce movement to combine with vision and light in your work. For me, I have a really big question, or burning question, relating to how you positioned yourself with respect to the different movements and the different kinds of categories of types of art and types of genre that were emerging around you in the 60s, both in Paris and elsewhere. I'm thinking of op art, geometric art, visual poetry, concrete poetry, kinetic art, etc., etc., etc. What was your own tack with respect to some of those classifications and positions?
Well, classifications are for historians, not for artists. Right? That's my first answer to that question, which is not to say that I would negate the fact that my work is kinetic, or that my work is that I also make work and have from a very early age and worked with visual poetry. So I don't see any reason why one has to belong only to one category. But unfortunately, you know, it often is like that. And so if you happen to work in many different areas, you're ignored. Your work can be, oh, well, she's not really that, you know. And you know, which is really a very big mistake. It's as if you were a physicist but worked in neurosciences and used physics in neurosciences. They would say, well, she's not really a physicist. Oh, but that's not really a neuroscientist either. And so in the end, that person might be left out in the cold when they could contribute a work of great importance to both areas. So I actually believe very strongly that this is a very old-fashioned, Newtonian concept of the way a human being functions, and that we are entering an era in which basically we're going back to the Renaissance, in which people can work in quite a few different areas and still be very focused and contribute a great deal to those areas. So that's an answer.
Well, would you be? How did you go about finding people to work with? You know, what we find with a number of artists who are working with technology, working with light, kinetic art, that they often, you know, work with other people to help to make the work. What was your own approach to doing that?
Well, it's again a long story. Basically, I never had a studio. I mean, now I have a studio. I didn't have a studio when I was 18, 19, 20. Throughout my 20s, I didn't have any studio. I worked in the bathroom of the hotel I lived in. I worked in a little chambre de bonne, you know. So you can't really make complex technological work like that, right? And so I went out to make the work. I mean, the first place that I worked that put me in touch with industry and technology was in New York, where this place where I used to buy the plastic, the owner liked me and said, you know, you don't have a studio? Here, I'll give you a corner in my warehouse. And I have this corner in the warehouse and the opportunity to use all the machineries and any material I wanted to use. You know? So for 6 months, I had this fantastic opportunity. And I think that made me realize that what I couldn't do in my own little space, I could do if I went out and found other people in other places where I could work. And that took me into industry. And I also became very fascinated by the industrial zone, if you like. Industry in itself, I felt, was creative, definitely creative, very creative. And I didn't really have the sort of political bias against the industrial area, if you like, the industrial matrix of our society, because I think it is the creative side of our society that creates all the stuff that we need to survive, you know. So I suppose that's the answer.
Right, and then when it comes to, you know, re-examining where you placed yourself in terms of galleries or where galleries included you, would it be accurate to say that you tended to, you could turn up in very many different places? I mean, you showed in poetry festivals in the UK, you were part of the Signals work in England as well. How did you find England as a place for kind of, you know, finding other people who understood what you were doing?
Well, at the time, which was 1966, 67, when I came to England, it was a mecca. You know, it was a wonderful centre for innovative work, not just kinetic, although kinetic and anybody working in kinetic art and light art as Signals was just amazing. It was, you know, really interested in that kind of work. And people like Guy Brett and then John Dunbar and Indica were very open. I mean, John Dunbar was not focused on kinetic art, but he was very, very open. So it was kinetic or Dada or Fluxus, all that kind of work interested him, work with language. And he was extremely open. And that changed after a few years, in fact. I suppose it was in the late 70s or middle 70s that there was a recession. I mean, it's all tied in. Now, economics... the economics of a country actually is very important, I suppose, for the way artists are sort of welcomed or not, you know, and the openness of the art market. And I think what happened was when the first recession that I experienced in England, which was, I think, around sometime, and actually it was around probably 72 or 73, that kind of closed down the interest in works such as kinetic art. And, you know, people became more interested in conceptual art, mainly because it was easier.
But looking back now, I mean, you're very much recognised, I hope you don't mind me saying so, as a, you know, a prefiguring, pioneering figure who was ahead of her time. Without putting you on the spot of art, how you... perceived yourself, that is really what interests me. Were you aware that you were maybe part of a movement, that you were breaking new ground, that there was something different that was being created there?
Well, I knew I was breaking new ground, actually. I mean, you can't not be aware of it. I mean, even in the first exhibition I had, which was at the Librairie Anglaise, what I was showing was so kind of outrageous compared to what was being shown anywhere else. So obviously I knew I was breaking new ground. And it was funny, too, because the people really liked what I was doing, were artists. You know? Even people like Billy Apple came to my show and wrote comments saying how... And, you know, he was completely divorced from what I was doing, and yet he loved my show. William Burroughs loved it. And the funny thing was that William Burroughs... actually, it was Brian Geisen had a show at Stadler, which was just across the street from Librairie Anglaise, and... they were showing Brian's paintings, calligraphic paintings, using some text from some of William's text. And I remember specifically, and I had in the window of the English bookshop, which was a much, much smaller gallery in the basement of the bookshop, tiny really, I had a poem machine that I did in collaboration with a poet called Nazli Noor, who is also... frequented that area, the Beat Hotel, and was very much liked and admired by William Burroughs, her work. And I would cut up her work because her work was very, very long. So, you know, she would have, a poem would be maybe 15 pages, and I would just choose bits of it and put them together, with her permission, of course. And so I remember the machine that was in the window was like, the first words were, "Get rid of government, laser. Get rid of government, true men, laser minds." And so it's a political statement as well, you know, and a kind of anarchist statement. And I think William Burroughs really liked that because that was the first time I actually had a solo conversation with him, a long conversation with him. He invited me to his room in the Beat Hotel to talk about the show, you know.
And so you also were quite close to Sinclair Bayliss, who yeah. was one of the people who started experimenting with cut-ups with Geisen, and I think it was is it Kerso, another poet at the time. Do you remember anything about that period?
Well, Sinclair was the perhaps the not the first. He was the first beat poet I met. Sinclair. He came to our apartment. I was living with Takis opposite the Place de la Concorde, and in a rented apartment. And Sinclair came and told. Immediately, Takis wasn't there, so he came and I offered him a cup of coffee. He sat down and started talking to me about the tobacco mosaic virus, telling me his experiments creating life out of the tobacco mosaic virus. And I thought he was a scientist. So I said, where are you doing this? And he said, oh, in my room at the Beat Hotel, you see. So I thought, very strange scientist, not working in a lab, you know. Of course, when Takis came back, I said to Takis, you know, your friend, the scientist, you know, maybe a biochemist or something, he came over, was telling me all about the tobacco mosaic virus and creating life. And he looked at me, well, who was that? And I said, Sinclair. Oh, that mad South African poet. But Sinclair was very much a feature in our life and came very, very often because... Taki said that he would put him in space, and so he would come every day because he was kind of worried about this, because what Taki wanted to do was hold him with a magnet in the air, you see, and Sinclair was worried about the magnet disturbing his brain, which was already quite disturbed. So he insisted that Takis had to buy him a helmet, and then he was lifted into the air. I don't remember any net, although Eduardo says there was a net. Eduardo wasn't there. He seems to know more about it than I do, which I think is a very interesting fact about memory, you know, what you remember and what you don't remember.
So I could keep getting a sense that in some ways you didn't need things like art and science initiatives to break these boundaries. You were already kind of... deconstructing these molds and these models and these classifications. It was just coming from the impulse of the people who were kind of there.
Well, you know, in 64, I was invited to London, and Signals asked me if I would write something for the Signals magazine. And because at the time I was very interested in science, and I was reading a lot of either not just Scientific American, but books. But in those days, Scientific American was really a very interesting magazine. And so I decided to do a cut-up between what I felt I was doing and an article, some article, I can't remember what it was about. I think it was about particles and atomic particles. That's as much as I remember. But I did a cut-up of... my ideas about my work and these the Scientific American article, and that's what I sent to Signals. I think it's still pretty interesting text and really goes to it quite deeply into what I was trying to do at the time, which was basically, I talk about walking through... walking through photons, you know. Well, we are walking through photons, you know. And I thought in the Echolights that I made, these early works with light, I thought that I was capturing photons. That was my sort of fantasy. I was capturing photons, but I knew that photons couldn't be still. And so somehow I had to make these photons actually... move. And so I invented a projector with a lamp and a turning lens. And so the light that was projected onto these perspex blocks, because I used blocks about 7-8 centimeters thick of perspex, and then I would inject, you can see me doing it there, inject with a hypodermic syringe a polymer, clear liquid polymer, that would create these lenses. And I would create what I thought of as star patterns, on the surface of the block. But then when the projector was lit and turning, these lenses did amazing things. They would split the reflections, of course. The reflections of life would of light would split and double and triple themselves, and then split, and one would seem to come out of the other and move across the perspex block. And that was strange because it seemed to me to be a very atomic image, you know, that it there was something really connected there. And I showed those at my first show with these turning drums with poems on them. So I had the word and light, what I would say logos and light, you know, together in the first exhibition I did, and this these cuttings. I showed those three works together. So I think, you know, I began, bang, with these two areas of my work, to work with light and work with language.